This is January 12th, 2013 in Bahrain, and we're going to be looking at Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, text 8 through 12. So the setup's a little funny here to be able to see what's on the wall. Hopefully you can maybe move a little so you can see me and the wall somehow through your peripheral vision, one way or the other. You're going to have one eye going one way and one eye going another way. Okay. So yesterday we talked about the two paths, the path of bhakti and the path of the yoga ladder. And now we're going to look at how they relate to each other. So once again, our goal is spiritual loving service for Shyamasundar. That's the goal, at least that's our goal as bhakti yogis. Now, Krishna's going to be talking about this process is the best, this process is, if you can't do this, do this, if you can't do this, do this. So we understand there are processes that are acceptable, good, better, and best. Just like if you want to travel, right, your fastest way will be a plane. You could take a car, you could take a bicycle, you could take a boat. We talk about what's the best process. However, it's better to achieve success at a lower level than to fail at a higher level. So if your car is broken, a bicycle's faster. Get that? Everybody get that point? You can say a plane's faster, but if you don't know how to fly a plane, then you're just going to crash. And you'll get there faster in a car. If you don't know how to drive a car, or you can't, you know, then you'll crash the car, better to take a bike. So you can talk about what's the best process, and then you can say, what's the best process for me, and what's the best process for me now? So when we say, what's the best process, we really mean, what's the best process for me now? Okay, what is the best process to achieve this goal of loving service for Shyamasundar? So this is text 8, where Krishna is saying, have a fixed mind and intelligence on Krishna. The best way, the best process, we should emphasize here that this is still a process. So when Krishna's talking about in text 8, he's still talking about a process. He's not talking about the goal. The process to achieve the goal is to have your mind and intelligence fixed on Krishna. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in commenting on text 8, says, to concentrate on Krishna only, remember Krishna only, that form of Shyamasundar, not to meditate on the Brahman. And we have our beautiful form of Shyamasundar here, with Radharani and with Lord Balaram, so to be fixed here on Shyamasundar. And to continually reflect on these scriptures in full contemplation, to have absorption, Krishna's form, Krishna's name, Krishna's quality, Krishna's pastimes, the instructions of the scriptures. So who's qualified to follow this process? And Srila Prabhupada, in the purport to text 8, describes the qualification for this process. To already have your mind fully fixed on Krishna always. Such a person, when they chant Hare Krishna, they'll experience that Krishna and his internal potency are dancing on their tongue. That will be their experience of chanting. When they offer food, they'll experience that Krishna is directly eating it, and they will not live on the material platform. So anyone who has this qualification can immediately take up this process to achieve Shyamasundar. And what do we call this process? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the process described in text 8 is Raganuga Bhakti, or Raganuga Sadhana. Now again, we want to emphasize that it's still a practice. Raganuga Bhakti is not meant for someone who's already perfect, but it's meant for someone who's already at an advanced level. So suppose you say, well, I'm not qualified for that process. I'm not at that point. You know, when I look at the path, it's impassable for me. So what will I do if I'm not qualified for Raghunandasadana? Mobile phones are fine if the music matches the topic. It's got to be like perfectly coordinated. And go ahead. We actually had a rule in the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education that anyone whose phone went off during the class had to buy sweets for everybody. So maybe we should we'll have to talk to the temple authorities whether or not we can institute that. So we had many days where we all had sweets for prasadam. Okay. So let's say you can't immediately practice Raghunandasadana Bhakti. Then what will you do? What's the step? The next best process is to practice to fix the mind. Does everybody follow this? So the best practice is you're already able to fix your mind totally on Krishna. If you can't do that, if you're not qualified for that, then you practice to fix your mind on Krishna. And Krishna calls this abhyas yoga. Abhyas means practice. And this is also referred to in Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, where Krishna says, wherever the mind wanders, pull it back. So one practicing Raghunandasadana Bhakti, the mind isn't wandering. You don't have to pull it back. In Abhyas Yoga, I've got to think about Krishna. Oh, I've got to think about Krishna. Oh, let me think about Krishna. We talked about this the other day, how you can think about Krishna as the sunlight and the moonlight and your ability and like that. Okay, the essence of Abhyas Yoga is repeatedly withdrawing the mind and fixing it on Krishna. And we talked about how Abhyas means... How Abhyas means practice, it also literally means to repeat. If we think about for a minute, I mean, we also talk about sadhana bhakti as meaning the practice of bhakti. And in fact, Abhyas yoga and sadhana bhakti are synonymous. What do we mean whenever we say we're going to practice something? We mean we're going to repeat it over and over and over again until we get it right, correct? So Abhyas Yoga, or practice yoga, means we keep repeating the effort to think of Krishna until we become steady, at which point we can perform Raghunandasadana. And here Srila Prabhupada is explaining that this Abhyas Yoga, or sadhana bhakti, is on the transcendental platform. It's not a material activity. Practicing to put the mind on Krishna. And it is also called sadhana bhakti. Now this statement here is very important, and if you only remember one thing from tonight's presentation, I hope you can remember at least this one quote. The beginning of sadhana bhakti, or the beginning of Abhyas Yoga, is what does it say here? To do what? What's the beginning? Who can tell me from this quote? What's the beginning of sadhana bhakti? Fix your mind on Krishna. If we say I'm practicing sadhana bhakti, what that means is I am practicing thinking of Krishna. Again, if you just get this one point from tonight, I'll be happy. If you get all the points, I'll be really happy. But if you can get this one point, that this is the essence. We start sadhana bhakti when we start practicing thinking of Krishna. It's primarily an activity of the mind. And this thinking of Krishna is something natural. It's something that's actually natural for the soul. It's not an artificial process. It's just a question of waking up that which is already there. So how to do Abhyas Yoga? So Srila Prabhupada is here giving instructions. This is from the purports to these verses. This is from, right now we're on text 9. So here he's talking about the various things to do with the body. But remember, what's the purpose of all these things doing with the body? To do what? To fix the mind on Krishna. So a reason we're offering prayers, the reason we're chanting Hare Krishna, the reason we're collecting flowers for the deities, etc., etc., hearing the Shastra, so we can fix our mind on Krishna. That's the beginning of sadhana bhakti, is to practice fixing your mind on Krishna. So while doing all those things, right, we listed all these things here. While we're doing these things, we should be constantly remembering Krishna. Now again, if you're automatically constantly remembering Krishna, then you're performing Raga Nuga Sadhana. If you're making an effort, then you're performing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Now here again, the gross body should be engaged in different activities, and the mind should also be engaged in hearing, thinking about, and chanting. So this is also nicely explained by Rupa Goswami in his definition of pure bhakti. You all know that verse? Do you know the verse definition of pure bhakti? Anyam vilasita sunyam jnana karma vinavratam anukulena krishna nushilanam bhakti rutiman. So anushilanam, shilanam implies both physical activities and mental activities. And then there's a certain attitude in Abhyas Yoga. The attitude is, I'm focusing on my service, I'm not focusing on my bodily maintenance. But this should be understood very clearly. It doesn't mean you don't do anything for bodily maintenance. It means that that's not your anxiety. You're not thinking, how am I going to make money? How am I going to maintain my family? How am I going to... You're thinking, how am I going to please Krishna? How am I going to please Krishna? We'll get into this a little bit more later. How am I going to please Krishna? How am I going to please Krishna? Now, part of pleasing Krishna is you have to do some work. But you're doing the work to please Krishna. You're not doing the work because you think, I have to do this work to maintain my body. Can you understand the difference between those two things?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, it's my duty to maintain my wife, my duty to maintain my children, my duty to maintain my body, so Krishna will be pleased because my body belongs to Krishna. My wife, my children, my husband belong to Krishna. Rather than thinking, oh, if I don't work hard, I'm going to starve. If I don't have a job, how will I live? So part of performing Abhyas Yoga or Sadhana Bhakti is you switch your mentality about what you're doing. It doesn't necessarily mean you quit your job and you just sit in the forest and chant all day. You change how you view things. Now, how do you get from Abhyas Yoga to Raga Nuga Bhakti? How do you get from Abhyas Yoga, practicing fixing the mind on Krishna? How do you make that bridge?
By desire.
By desire. And this is what Krishna says in verse 9. So how do you know you're ready to move from Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti or Abhyas Yoga to Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti? It's when you have a strong desire to do so. Now that's not, desire isn't intellectual. Desire isn't, I think I'd like to do that. Desire is on the platform of the emotions and the will. It's not just on the level of the thoughts. And this desire is explained in the Bhakti Yasamrita of Sindhu. Should be very specific. When the desire awakens in the heart, oh, Krishna is my friend, Krishna is my lover, Krishna is my son. When that feeling awakens in the heart, then one can go on to Raga Nuga Sadhana. And that comes by repetitive practice. By practicing, thinking of Krishna, that desire will awaken and one can bridge to Raga Nuga Sadhana. And this is really the essence of everything we're doing in bhakti. Amazing purport, isn't this? Isn't that an incredible statement? The materialistic world is called the darkest region of God's creation. Yet the unhappy materialist can get out of it simply by desiring to get out. And you might say, well, I desire to get out. So we don't mean just like, yeah, that might be a nice thing to do, but an intense desire. The whole purpose of everything we're doing in bhakti yoga, the entire purpose, is getting such an intense desire to love Krishna that we don't care about anything else. And when that's there, then Krishna will award it to us. Okay, so here we have from Abhyas Yoga, the bridge is desire to Raga Nuga Bhakti or coming to Bhava in Vaidhi. So this is looking at, this is text 8, And this is text 9. Actually, this is text 9. This is text 9, text 8. All right, well, suppose you say, God, I can't even do Abhyasa Yoga. I just can't even practice to think of Krishna. I go a day, 2 days, a week, and I haven't thought of Krishna once. Then what do? Say, trying to control my mind and thinking of Krishna. It's just like, it's really windy now, you know, trying to control the wind. Okay? So, the next step, down, if you can't even practice thinking of Krishna, is you do the Angas of Bhakti externally. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on his commentary in text 10 says that if you do the services with your body, hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, everything that was mentioned previously, even without thinking of Krishna while you're doing them, then you will also come to the perfect stage. Now, you will have to go through those steps, but this then becomes the first step. Now, please keep in mind that this step is not really sadhana bhakti, because sadhana bhakti begins with thinking of Krishna. So if you're doing the external activities of bhakti without thinking of Krishna, without making an effort to think of Krishna, without trying to think of Krishna, then this is in the category of Krishna karma. It's working for Krishna. Not karma like materialistic karma in the sense of work, not in the sense of under the material laws. But you're working for Krishna. You're doing things for Krishna, but it's not sadhana bhakti. And this again, this is the main, one of the main points I really like for you to get. If we're using our body in Krishna's service, but we're not making an effort to think of Krishna, we haven't started sadhana bhakti. We're working for Krishna. We're in chapter 12, text 10. We're not in chapter 12, text 9. All right, now let's say that that's where you are. And it's important to be honest about where we are. We can't make any progress if we pretend to be something that we're not. We're trying to approach the absolute truth. So if we're going to approach the absolute truth, guess what? We have to be truthful. Make sense? Can you approach the absolute truth if you're deceitful? Won't work. I mean, maybe you'll deceive somebody else in the world, but you can't deceive God. And so if that's actually the level that we're on, you know, just go back a little bit here. If this is a level that we're on and you say, you know, I can't really think about Krishna, and I'm really, this is where I am, I'm really over here. Okay? So then what's the mood? There has to be a mood. Just like in order to be doing sadhana bhakti or vyasa yoga, you have to be making an effort to think of Krishna. So in order even to be in the external platforms of the angas of bhakti, there's certain definitions of that if it's going to be pure bhakti. One is not wanting to go to the heavenly planets and not wanting to merge into the Brahman. So one has to have a goal, one still has to have the goal of loving service for Shyamasundara. Otherwise, it's not even really the angas of bhakti at all. Now, how does one get to Abhyasa Yoga from the angas of bhakti? In other words, if I say, okay, right now all I can do is external work for Krishna. I can't even try to think of Krishna. Maybe I'm actually thinking of Krishna, you know, once every 3 months for 5 minutes. How do I get to the point where I'm really practicing to fix my mind on Krishna? So the bridge is peace. That is the bridge. Does that make sense? If I can't fix my mind on Krishna, if I can't even practice fixing my mind on Krishna, it means I must lack peace. It means my mind is jumping all over like a monkey, or blowing all over like the wind. It's not peaceful. By doing the external activities of bhakti with the proper mentality, which we'll get to in a minute, then I achieve the peace to perform sadhana bhakti, which starts with sadhana bhakti begins when you are fixing your mind and practicing to fix your mind on Krishna. And by practicing to fix my mind on Krishna, what bridges me again to now Raganuga Bhakti?
Desire.
Okay. So how do you do peace? How do you get this peace? When we're engaged in the external angas of bhakti, how do I get the peace? Is this a good question? Has anyone here asked, you don't have to raise your hand, but has anyone here asked the question, how could I fix, how could I be, have a peaceful mind so I can start thinking about Krishna? I don't want to know the answer to that. So we looked at, then we go back to chapter 5. Bhaktira megatapasam sarvaloka maheshram suvidam sarvabhutanam gyatramamam shanti michati. This is the peace formula. To know that Krishna is the beneficiary, Krishna is the master, and Krishna is the friend. So in the early days of the movement, there was a deity of Krishna that wasn't on the altar. Actually, he looked very, very much like Krishna, who's on your central altar here. Yes, but the deity that was in San Francisco looked very much like that. Very, very much, his hand on his hip, just like that. And Prabhupada said, you should call him Kartami Shai, which means the boss. So I've been talking about this the last few days. This is, Krishna is my boss. So if you're just performing the external angas of bhakti, and you haven't yet even really practiced to fix your mind on Krishna, the way you achieve the peace to fix your mind on Krishna is you think of Krishna as your boss. And here's a nice quote, whatever work is done for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord. So you're thinking, whatever I'm doing to please Krishna. I'm serving my husband not to please my husband, but to please Krishna. I'm taking care of my children not to please my children, but to please Krishna. I'm working at my job not to please the employer at my job, but to please Krishna. I'm driving my car to please Krishna. He's my boss. Right? And here's a very nice letter. You're a married wife, so in that position, you should serve your husband nicely always, being attentive to his needs. The nature of woman is to be attached to her husband and family, so our system is to minimize this attachment by making the ultimate goal of activity the pleasure of Krishna. Just try to please Krishna always, and no material circumstances will be able to cause you any discomfort. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be great? Yeah. So does Prabhupada say here, be a lousy wife? Does he say that? Does he say, don't care about your husband, neglect him, say, sorry Prabhu, I'm going to go do service at the temple, bye. Is that what he says? No. He says, serve your husband nicely, attentive to his needs, but who are you trying to please? Your husband? You're trying to please Krishna. Now, why would that make no material circumstances able to cause you any discomfort? Because if I'm trying to please an ordinary jiva, will that jiva always be pleased? No. What do you say? This is a quote for the ladies. So what do you say, ladies? Is your husband always pleased with you? No. And I bet you try hard, too. So that's the nature. If I try to please another jiva in this world, on Monday they're happy with me, on Tuesday they're not happy with me. On Monday at 10 in the morning they're happy, and at 10:30 they're not happy. And I don't even know what I did. I didn't do anything. This is our experience, yes?
It's vice versa as well.
Hmm?
It's vice versa as well.
Yes, exactly. You know, you try to please your boss at work. And what pleases your boss on Monday doesn't please them on Tuesday. You have this experience?
Yes.
And you think, I can't figure this out. And you can read so many books and take so many courses. You know? And you give your whole life. And the other, whoever you're trying to satisfy in this world, will they say, now I'm completely satisfied? No. They'll say, well, you had this fault and this fault, and what about you have this fault and you have this fault? Is this our experience?
Yes.
Yes. And so if I'm trying to please someone else in this world, separate from Krishna, then I'm going to feel miserable a lot of the times. But if I'm trying to please Krishna, then, you know, it doesn't matter. If one day my wife's in a bad mood, I'm still happy because Krishna's still pleased with me if I'm doing the right thing. If I did my best to do my duty, then Krishna's smiling. And if other people appreciate or not, it doesn't matter because I'm getting that appreciation from Krishna. This is not a hard thing to do. And this is what needs to be done before even sadhana bhakti. This is what can be done if all you're qualified for is the external angas of bhakti without even thinking of Krishna very much. Just start thinking, I'm doing this for Krishna. You're not thinking Krishna's name, form, quality. You're saying, I'm doing this for Krishna. I'm trying to please Krishna. That will give you the peace by which you'll be able to start thinking of Krishna. And then thinking of Krishna will give you the desire that you'll wake up your eternal nature. Another nice purport. In every sphere of life, the Lord should be situated as a proprietor, even in our ordinary dealings. This is the key to achieving the mental peace. We think, I will get mental peace if I get a better job and make more money. I'll get mental peace if I can just get my wife to stop nagging me. I'll get peace if I, you know. We're thinking, if I arrange this and this and this and this in my life, I'll have peace. Does that work? We've tried that, right? If I just adjust this thing, then I'll be peaceful. Okay, I'm peaceful for a minute. Oh, now I gotta fix this thing. Okay, peaceful for a minute. Oh, now this thing's off. Okay, now I gotta fix that thing. And we're thinking, as soon as I get, if only I could get everything. But as soon as you get one thing in place, something else goes out of place. And sometimes everything goes out of place at once. And we're spending lifetime after lifetime trying to adjust everything. Instead, what we should be adjusting is in here. That as soon as I really see Krishna as the proprietor, he's the one I should be pleasing. He's the one paying my salary. He's the one maintaining me. He's the one meeting all of my needs. Then I become peaceful. Now this is a very interesting point. One should not be attached to the results of his work, but the results be offered to Krishna. One should accept this prasad, the remnants of offering to Krishna. Okay, so I'm trying to please Krishna. I'm taking nice care of my wife. I'm treating her with love and affection and consideration, so Krishna will smile at me. And then when my wife smiles at me, I say, oh, thank you, Krishna, for the prasad. Do you get that? I'm taking nice care, I'm serving my boss nicely, so Krishna will smile at me. And when my boss says, oh, you did good work, I say, thank you, Krishna, for the prasad. Whatever Krishna gives me, that's coming from Krishna. It's not coming from my boss, it's not coming from my wife, it's not coming from my father, it's coming from Krishna. So I'm offering everything in sacrifice, whatever I get is prasad. And I thank you, Krishna, for the prasad. Okay, we've gone now through the direct path, the recommended path to achieve transcendental loving service to Shyamasundara, where we'll realize our eternal nature and play with Krishna in the spiritual world. So first part of the path is I engage my senses in the activities of bhakti, external with the view that Krishna is my boss. That gives me the peace. So I can practice pulling my mind back to Krishna repeatedly while I'm engaging in the activities of bhakti, which gives me desire, which allows me to have full and constant absorption of the mind and intellect, which leads to full samadhi. We can see it like this. Now we're going to look at the other path. So we've looked right now at the direct path. Here's our direct path, goes from here to here, to here, and now we're going to look at the indirect path. Okay, indirect path. Indirect path starts with previous qualification. So to start just doing external bhakti, you need, remember we talked about this yesterday, you don't need any previous qualification. All you have to do is want to do it and be alive. Whereas if you take the indirect path, first you have to follow varnashram. First you have to be a pious person according to the varnashram system. And following varnashram means you're following it for heaven. You want to enjoy a nice life in this life, and you want to enjoy a nice life after death. That's why people are performing ordinary varnashram. Then your next step after that would be you're still performing the aspects of varnashram. You're still pious, but now you're not doing it so you'll have a happy life in this life and the next life. You're doing it for purification. You're saying, I'm still doing those duties, but I'm doing it for purification. You can contrast that with the angas of bhakti. Well, I'm still doing those duties maybe, but I'm doing them to please Krishna. Here I'm doing them for my own personal purification. This is the indirect path. From there, I cultivate knowledge of the self and Brahman from the Shastra. From there, I actually meditate on the self and Brahman. From there, I achieve realization of the self, Brahman, and Paramatma. And then from there, I can practice Abhyas Yoga in Bhakti. Okay, indirect path. This is from the book Renunciation Through Wisdom. Prabhupada says, live according to the dictates of your social and spiritual order, that's varnashram. Get enough piety to do karma yoga, then go to jnana yoga, then in meditation or jnana yoga, realize the Lord, then see the Lord in your heart, and then progress to seeing Shamasundar and serving Shamasundar. So again, you have to have a preliminary qualification for this indirect path. You have to be a pious person according to Varnashram Dharma. You can't just say, okay, I'm going to start karma yoga. Or what to speak of what people do in the modern age. Okay, I'm going to start jnana yoga. I'm going to start meditating. You first have to be a pious person according to Varnashram, or you won't be able to do it. Then you can start the real yoga ladder. I mean, Varnashram isn't even yoga. That karma yoga means I'm doing varnashram, but I'm doing them because I want liberation. And what is the essence of this? Karma palatyagas, or sarva karma palatyaga. You're giving up the fruit of your work. You're working, but you don't enjoy the fruit. What is the fruit? Heaven. I'm working, but I don't care whether my work brings me happiness or not. That'd be hard, wouldn't it? I mean, I can work to please Krishna in bhakti, and I can be working for the happiness of Krishna smiling at me, but in the yoga ladder, you're not working for any happiness. You're working for eventual, oh, this will purify me, this will purify me, this will purify me. You understand the difference? So just karma yoga means it's very me-focused. I'm thinking, I'm working for my purification. In the external angas of bhakti, you're still doing work in the world, but you're not thinking, I'm working for my purification. You're thinking, I'm working for Krishna's pleasure. And what you're enjoying is Krishna being pleased with you. Whereas you're not getting much enjoyment at all. Remember we talked about that yesterday? How it's a very difficult path because you're not getting much pleasure? Okay, so step one on the yoga ladder, Krishna's describing, mad yogam ashritam. You're offering everything to Krishna, but the Krishna you're offering to here is not Shamasundar Krishna. You remember that from yesterday? What Krishna are you offering to? Anybody remember? What form of Krishna are you offering to here in Karma Yoga? Brahman. With a controlled mind. Yet atmavan. So you have to, this is why you need piety as a qualification, even start karma yoga, because in karma yoga you have to have a controlled mind. Now step two is jnana. So in step one on the yoga ladder, you're doing varnashram, offering to the Brahman for your own purification. Step two, you're studying the shastra. You're intellectually becoming convinced that this world is, trying to enjoy this world is foolish, it's temporary, it's illusory, I'm something greater than that. You're becoming convinced on the intellectual platform. And just a little side note, in Bhagavad Gita 5.4, Krishna says the purpose of Sankhya and Karma Yoga is the same, and therefore you could go from Varnashram directly to Gyan Yoga and skip the step of Karma Yoga. That's a little note that one should. Okay? Now, how does Karma Yoga or Gyan Yoga prepare you for Gyan Yoga? Gyan Yoga is where you're absorbed fully in meditation. And here, we're reading how charity, prescribed duties, observing major and minor regulative principles, etc., they aim at subduing the mind. So the purpose of Karma Yoga and Gyan Yoga is to subdue the mind. So our bridge from Karma Yoga to Gyan Yoga, or to Gyan Yoga. So you can go from Varnashram to Karma Yoga, or you can go from Varnashram to Gyan Yoga, and you can go from Karma Yoga to Gyan Yoga, or you can go from Karma Yoga directly to Gyan Yoga. And the bridge is Chajak, Shantir, Anantara. You attain, what's the word? Peace. Retain peace. You remember that peace was the bridge from the angas of bhakti to Abhyasta Yoga. So peace is also the bridge from Karma Yoga to Gyan Yoga, or from Gyan Yoga to Gyan Yoga. The result of Karma Yoga, Krishna says, is peace. He says the result of giving up your work, working for the Brahman, instead of working for your own happiness, is you'll find peace. And you can think about how this works. Again, the reason I become unpeaceful, the reason I become agitated, is I'm trying to find some happiness in this world, and when I don't find it, I become upset. I'm trying to please my husband, and if he's not pleased, I'm upset. I'm trying to please my boss, and if he's not pleased, I'm upset. You can notice whenever we get upset, it's because I'm trying for something that I'm not getting. Well, if I don't want anything, I won't get upset anymore, now will I? Remember, this is the indirect path. Okay? Tvajat Shantir Anantaram. The result of letting go of our attachments is peace. So if you work for purification instead of for heaven, you will attain the peace that will allow you to meditate. Which Krishna also describes in the second chapter. Like the ocean that's not disturbed by all the rivers flowing into it, becomes peaceful. And as soon as you try to satisfy your desires, you're agitated and you can't engage in meditation. Ashantasya kuta sutam sukam kuta. How can there be? Ashantasya. Without shanti, you can't have happiness. Prahlad Maharaj describes that as long as we look for happiness, we don't find it. You only find happiness when you stop looking for it. As long as we're looking for happiness outside of ourselves, I'm going to be happiness if this person treats me this, then you're always in anxiety. Suppose this doesn't happen. Suppose this doesn't happen. Suppose this doesn't happen. So now step three on the yoga ladder. So now you've achieved peace through either Karma Yoga or Gyan Yoga. So now you can engage in dhyan. You can engage in meditation, where you withdraw your senses from the world and you fix your mind on the Paramatma. So let's say you've absorbed your mind in the Paramatma. You've attained dhyan yoga. How do you get from Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, or Dhyan Yoga to bhakti? By the grace of a devotee. You have to get faith. So you already have peace. So such persons, if they're accomplished in karma yoga, gyan yoga, or dhyan yoga, they don't have to start just at the angas of bhakti externally because they already have peace. But they need to develop faith. By the way, such persons cannot go directly to raganuga bhakti. They have to go first to abhyas yoga. All right, we're going to pass this out to everybody. You could pass this one back to the ladies so they can pass that out. Thank you. And take one, pass it down over here, and take one, pass it down over here to the men. I don't think there's enough for everybody, so you're going to have to share. It's basically a copy of what's on the screen, so you can have it and take it with you. Okay, this is sort of summarizing everything that we've discussed so far. Here you see the yoga ladder and its relationship to bhakti. There's two sides of the paper. One of them corresponds to the screen that's up right now. So the very bottom is vikarma, sinful activity. Now you can go from sinful activity directly to bhakti. Give me an example of someone who went from sinful activity directly to bhakti. Jagan Maharaj, another example.
Ajamil,
another example.
Valmiki.
So one can go from sinful activity directly to bhakti. One does not need to be pious to go to bhakti, although it helps. You can go directly from piety to bhakti. Or you can go from piety to karma yoga. You can go from karma yoga to either gyan yoga or dhyan yoga. You can also go from karma kanda to gyan yoga. And then for any of those, from karma yoga, gyan yoga, or dhyan yoga, you can go to abhyas yoga with faith. And if you get off the yoga ladder before you go to bhakti, then there's different attainments, different results that you'll achieve. Is this clear?
It applies.
Does anybody have any questions about this slide before we go on? Any questions about this? This is a summary of everything we've talked about so far.
It's not necessary that everyone will have the same way progressive. Everyone
exactly. Has... Very good. Very good. So looking at this, you can see that different people are going to go in different ways. One person may go from vikarma to the angas of bhakti to abhyas yoga to raganuga bhakti. Another person may go from vikarma to karma kanda to the angas. So you may go, yes, they may go in different ways. The goal is the same. But you can see that if you're on the yoga ladder, you could end up with different destinations. So if you're on the yoga ladder and you don't switch over to bhakti, you could end up on higher planets or in good families or all kinds of different destinations. Any other questions on this?
One of the previous slides you said on realizing the Brahman, you need the grace of a devotee. You mean that?
You need the grace of a devotee to switch over to abhyas yoga. You want us to go back to that. Okay, so you need, in order to get to the abhyas yoga of bhakti, you need the grace of a devotee. So we didn't add that, I just didn't have enough room. But that the grace of the devotee gives you faith. So by association with some devotee, you get the faith to switch over to abhyas yoga. Now you notice that once you're on the karma yoga, yan yoga, or dhyan yoga platform, you don't need to start at the external angas of bhakti, you can go right to abhyas yoga. Which is why, going back to the very beginning of chapter 12, when Arjuna asked the question, should I start with bhakti from the beginning, or should I first realize the self? You might think, well, if I go up the yoga ladder, I can go right to abhyas yoga. I don't have to start with the angas of bhakti. However, starting with the angas of bhakti is much faster and it's much more pleasant, as we discussed yesterday. If you try to go through the yoga ladder, you may get distracted to the other goals, and you're doing an unnatural, difficult process. Okay, now we're going to look at the back of your, it's on the back of your paper. We're going to look a little bit more in detail about Varnashram. So here you can see what is the role of Varnashram in bhakti. So Varnashram is optional at the level of the angas of bhakti. Now, of course, even in Abhyasayoga, even in Radha Yoga Sadhana Bhakti, a person is very likely to still be doing externally some of the activities of Varnashram from an external vision. They may still be working at a job or in one of the ashrams, etc. Does anyone have any questions on this slide?
Mataji?
Yes?
The devotees who are in the Jnana Yoga and the Dhyana Yoga, for them the Bhagavan realization is very much restricted, right?
Yes.
They can't achieve problems.
That's not a focus on Bhagavan.
But the devotee through the direct path, in the bhakti, for him this is available.
Yes. Correct. Other questions on the slide? Yes.
When we say someone has achieved paramatma realization, what is his destination? Where does it go?
Paramatma realization, you can go to the planet and the universe where Kshiradakshaya Vishnu is residing. Or you can go to the higher planets and have mystic cities. Actually, it's quite interesting. One can also say, and we're going to get to mixed bhakti in a minute, one can also say that you can have mixed forms of all of these. So there can be mixed karma yoga, mixed gyan yoga, mixed dhyan yoga. So if someone's meditating on the paramatma for cities, then you just simply get a higher body within the material world. But you can live on the planet with the paramatma.
Is there an eternal destination here that you...
That's a good question. I don't know. My guess is that it could be. I don't know the answer to that.
On the yoga ladder, to go to the sadhana bhakti, or right side of it, the grace of the devotee is required.
Yes, correct.
Left side, it's natural or the process might get it.
Might. But to move over to bhakti, you have to get the grace of a devotee. I mean, anyone, even if you start from vikarma, you have to get the grace of a devotee to start bhakti. Yes, but they might not be a Vaishnava.
Yeah, that means some devotee is there.
But if they might not be a devotee. You could have a Brahmana who's not a devotee. You could have a Brahmana who's interested in Brahman realization, or a Brahmana who's interested in Swarga, or... You wouldn't have to be somebody who's actually a devotee. But yes, you have to have some guidance. Okay, now we're going to look at a summary of putting it all together in another way. So through the yoga path, you develop peace, and if you develop faith, you can go to Abhyasayoga. Through the angas of bhakti, through peace, you can go to Abhyasayoga. From Abhyasayoga, you develop desire, you can go to Radha Yoga Bhakti. Now, karma-covered bhakti is where you have the mentality that I must engage in pious activities in order to become purified enough to perform bhakti. If anybody says to you, you must engage in karma activities, you must engage in Varnashram in order to be qualified to perform Abhyasayoga, in order to be qualified to think of Krishna, that's karma-covered bhakti. They're mixing karma and karma yoga with bhakti. And if someone says, you have to first become purified and think of the self before you can meditate on Krishna, that's jnana-covered bhakti, or jnana mixed with bhakti. The pure bhakti path is I come to the point of being able to practice thinking of Krishna by the external angas of bhakti. So bhakti is doing all the purification itself. Okay, so this is our note now. There's also mixtures. You can have karma measure bhakti and you can have gyan measure bhakti. And it's very possible to think you're in bhakti when actually you're in karma measure bhakti or in gyan measure bhakti. Anyone who thinks my material piety is necessary to purify me in order to attain bhakti, that is karma measure bhakti. Or if you think, first I have to become purified by something else other than bhakti, you're mixing bhakti with something else. Okay? Summary of the past. So the yoga ladder is the long road. Right? From karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga, it's a long way. So karma yoga, you're working without wanting to enjoy the fruits. Then you have knowledge from the scripture and renunciation, detachment. Then you can meditate. But you have to surpass that to come to bhakti. So it's a long road. And Prabhupada says, why walk up all these stairs if we can take an elevator? Then we can come to the top in a matter of seconds. Bhakti yoga is the elevator, the direct process. We can go step by step or we can go directly. And here we have our elevator. Okay, we're now going to do part three. You can turn on the lights.
About the desire. Actually, do we have to we should deserve before we desire, isn't it? Or how do we take the desires? Because sometimes our desireness may not be mature enough in the eye of the Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God.
Okay, the desire that brings you to Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti is a specific desire for a relationship. Those papers are for you to take home. I'm sorry if we don't have enough for everybody. It's a specific desire to serve Krishna in a particular way. And that has to arise spontaneously. If you say, well, you know, I've read the books and I think I'd like to be a cowherd boy. That's not the kind of desire we're talking about. We're talking about the kind of natural feeling. It's a feeling. Your desire is a feeling. The kind of natural feeling, just like even in ordinary life, you meet a certain person and you think, wow, I'd really like to be their friend. I remember a few years ago, I met one of my god sisters. I met her for the first time. And within 5 minutes, I said, you know, I'd really like to be your friend. You've had this experience, you meet someone and you feel just a spontaneous feeling of friendship for them. Or you may feel that way with other people that you want to help them. You want to be like a guide, a teacher. You feel some compassion and you think, like, I'd really like to help this person. Or we've all had spontaneous romantic feelings. You see someone of the opposite sex and you think, oh, I'm attracted to this person. So that kind of feeling for Krishna, the qualification for entering into Raghunuga Sadhana, is you've been practicing in Abhyasa Yoga, Sadhana Bhakti, practicing thinking of Krishna, practicing thinking of Krishna, practicing thinking of Krishna, practicing. And at a certain point, our natural relationship with Krishna starts to wake up. And at some point, while you're practicing thinking of Krishna, whether it's in your japa, whether it's in the kirtan, whether it's in worshipping the deity, whether it's in reading the books, whether it's in smiling at your wife for Krishna, whatever it is, all of a sudden you'll get this inner desire for Krishna. And at that point, you can start practicing Raghunuga Sadhana. It's not an intellectual thing. It's on the platform
of
desire.
At that stage, how we can identify that it is a natural desire or concoction?
How can you identify it? Well, the other qualification for Raghunuga Sadhana, as given in Nectar Devotion, is that you have to at least be on the platform of an Arta Nivritti. So if you're engaged in meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, you're definitely not qualified. So if you're having illicit sex and you think, I want Krishna as my lover, it's nonsense. That's... If you're out drinking wine and you think, oh yes, I'm really a coward boy, it's nonsense. It's some hallucination. So that's one thing. You have to at least be on the platform of an arta nivritti. The other thing, how can you tell? Right now I'm speaking through a microphone. Right now I'm just speaking loudly. Can you tell the difference? You could tell the difference with your eyes closed? Yes?
Yes.
There's a different sound quality in the natural voice and the artificial voice. Correct?
Yes.
Can you tell the difference between freshly squeezed orange juice and bought in the store in a box orange juice?
Yes.
Has a different flavor.
Yes.
Or what to speak, I don't know if they have it here, but in America they have something called juicy juice. It's not real juice. They have that kind of thing here too? Water with sugar and flavor.
Yeah.
And if you look in the ingredients, it says, you know, 2% juice. Right?
Yeah.
So if you have real fruit juice and juicy juice, can you tell the difference?
Yes.
Yes. And if you've ever had a tree-ripened fruit or vine-ripened vegetable, if you ever picked a tomato out of your backyard, or you picked a, you know, mango right from the tree, ripened on the tree, or you buy something in the supermarket shipped from Chile, can you tell the difference?
Yes.
So we all have the capacity to tell the difference between the real and the artificial. We can usually tell when somebody dyes their hair, correct? Looks artificial. We can tell the difference between real beauty and artificial beauty. So material feelings are all artificial. When your feelings for Krishna awaken, they will be on the platform of the real. And they have a different quality. You say, how will I know? How do you know anything's real other than artificial? You know. The flavor is different, correct? Everybody knows. Even little children, they can tell the difference between fresh squeezed orange juice and juicy juice with 1% fruit juice in it. So when the feelings for Krishna awaken, there's something like material romance or friendship or parental or servant, but they're real. So when that feeling awakens, and if you're also free from at least the gross anartas, and you've been able to, then you can start that process. Is that all right?
Yep. Is it necessary that one has to pass through Raganga Bhakti to attain prema?
No. Very good question. This one, but the prema that you'll attain will be different. So Rupa Goswami describes there's two kinds of bhava. There's Vaidhi bhava and Raganuga bhava. And there's Vaidhi prema and there's Raganuga prema. So if you come to Raganuga, to Vaidhi bhava and Vaidhi prema, where will you go? Where will you go?
Vaikuntha.
You won't go to Goloka Vrindavan. Now you could start Raganuga. Raganuga sadhana is started before bhava. Raganuga sadhana is started from the higher platform of anartha nivritti or from nishta. It's a practice. Now, somebody could start Raganuga at bhava or even start Raganuga at prema. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure if everyone even understood that question, but to those of you who understood that question, are you clear with the answer? Okay. Yes.
That when we mention about Raganuga, why we add the word start? Is it not spontaneous?
Why do we add?
Word as we start Raganuga, rather than we say it's a spontaneous for a sadhana.
Why do we call it a sadhana?
Why do we call the Raganuga? But it starts, one starts Raganuga Bhakti. His Raganuga Bhakti is not spontaneous.
It still has a start. Even if it's spontaneous. And Raganuga, it's in sadhana. Rupa Goswami puts Raganuga Bhakti in his sadhana category. So it's a kind of practice. It's spontaneous in the sense that your reason for doing it is spontaneous. The practice itself is still a practice.
It is not both together?
Both what together?
I mean, the spontaneous as well as the sadhana, as you said. The
spontaneous means what's your impetus. Your impetus is coming from a spontaneous feeling. But your practice is still a deliberate practice. Therefore, it's in the category of practice.
So it's both.
If you're in love with a girl, you might still have to think about and deliberately try to please her. You might still have to go to your friend who says, okay, you know, what do I do to make my wife happy? And you might read a book about it. And you might still follow some particular formula. But your impetus is coming from a spontaneous feeling of attraction. Whereas if you don't really have affection for your wife, but you're thinking, well, it's my moral duty to keep the marriage together, and I want to be a good, pious person, and how do I please my wife and keep my marriage together? So in both cases, you may be following a formula, but in one, your motive is spontaneous, and in the other, your motive is simply the scriptures and the moral regulations. So in Vaidhi Bhakti, you're some taste, of course, because the beginning even of Vaidhi Bhakti is some taste, some attraction. So there's some attraction to Krishna even in Vaidhi Bhakti. But the main thing that's compelling you is that there's a rule. So you're thinking, okay, I have to chant my 16 rounds because I promised my guru I would chant my 16 rounds. So if you still have japa to chant at 8 o'clock at night, are you saying, okay, I got to chant my japa because I made a vow? Or I got to chant my japa because that way I'll be able to get closer to Krishna, who's my child. The impetus is different. What's pushing you is different. And the practice is also a little different. The practice of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and the practice of Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti is internally a little different. It's not exactly the same practice. Externally, it will look very much the same, but internally, it's quite different. Is that clear? Yeah. And by Raganuga Sadhana, one gets to the point that one isn't doing any sadhana anymore. One gets to the point that your actions are also spontaneous. So Raganuga Sadhana, your actions are deliberate, but your impetus is spontaneous. At Bhava, both your impetus and your actions are spontaneous. Is that clear?
Okay.
What are the practices of Raganuga
Bhakti? Examples of...
Example? What do you mean by examples? Examples of devotees who engage in Raganuga Sadhana? You mean like names?
Yes.
No. I'm not sure what you mean.
No, devotees who have achieved this Raganuga.
History.
Oh, but then you're looking at people who've already achieved the end of Raganuga, and you're not looking at them in sadhana anymore. You could look as an example, if you want to look from Shastra, of Raghunath Das Goswami. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Raghunath Das Goswami in how to perform Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. He said, externally perform the activities of a sadhaka, and he said, you're a renunciate, so your activities are you should eat simple food and wear simple clothing, don't talk about village talk, you're a sannyasi. So those are your external duties, and internally always serve Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. Later on, Mahaprabhu gave him a Govardhan Shiva also, and gave him a very simple deity worship for the Govardhan Shiva. So that's an example of Mahaprabhu specifically engaging someone in Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. Is that what you were looking for?
Yes.
If Jiva is destined for Vaikuntha, then that jiva will not get that impetus for Raganuga Bhakti?
Yes, correct.
Where do you draw the line between what you're pleasing Krishna and what you are pleasing yourself? Because it's always what we desire, what tends us to make think that we are trying to please Krishna.
Oh, what a lovely question. Where do you draw the line between how do we know we're trying to please ourselves and we're trying to please Krishna? Did that match? I'm not sure. We'll have to vote on it. The difference is subtle, and one can tell the difference mostly by the effect. So just like in 1976, when we were meeting with Srila Prabhupada, and I was sitting in front of Srila Prabhupada, and my oldest son was sitting on my lap, about 1.5 years old, like that child is sitting right now on your lap. And Prabhupada looked at me and he said, just like this mother is loving her son without any expectation of return, in the same way you should love Krishna. And my father said, will loving her son help her to love Krishna? And Prabhupada said, no. But loving Krishna will help her to love her son. He said, just like if you want good eyesight, you have to eat good food. But if you put the food in your eyes, you become blind. So, you know, carrots are good for your eyes, but if you stick the carrots in your eyes... So we're part of Krishna. If I try to please Krishna, I will feel pleased. Just like if my hand takes the food and puts it in my mouth, I feel pleased. And if the hand takes the food and puts it in my eye, I don't feel pleased. So how do you know the difference between trying to please yourself and trying to please Krishna? You can judge by the result. If you're trying to please yourself, you'll feel mixed happiness and distress. You'll feel frustration. You'll feel anxiety. You'll feel anger. You'll be getting upset with people. You know, you have a lot of fear. If you're trying to please Krishna, you'll feel peaceful, and you'll feel joyful, and you'll feel free. And you'll feel peaceful and joyful and free, even if other people are upset with you, even if you're not getting what you want, even if something in your life is being threatened, because that won't be the source of your satisfaction anymore. So that's one main way you can judge, is you can judge by the result. Of course we want to be happy. We're anandamaya bhiasat. If someone tells you that bhakti yoga means stop caring about your own happiness, that's crazy. You can't. We're pleasure-seeking beings. Bhakti yoga means that I start thinking, how do I actually become happy? Well, I actually become happy by making Krishna happy. Now what happens when I start focusing on making Krishna happy is I start getting happy automatically. And after a while, I can forget about my own happiness because it's happening automatically. Not because I don't care about whether or not I'm happy anymore, but because it's automatically there. Something like, children don't have to worry whether or not they're going to get food and clothing. They don't even have to think about it if they've got good parents, right? If they please their parents are naturally going to take care of them. And the traditional wife, I don't know how many of those there are anymore, but you know, the traditional wife, all she has to do is please her husband takes care of her. She doesn't have to think what's happening with the money. Is the rent going to be paid? Is the food going to be bought? Am I going to get a nice sari? She doesn't have to think about it. She thinks about pleasing her husband, he takes care of her. Or a good employer. Again, I don't know if there are any anymore, but you know, a good employer. All you have to think about is achieving the company's mission. If you have a good employer, you don't have to worry, am I going to get paid or not? You can forget about it. You don't have to worry, am I going to get a desk to work at? Am I going to get a computer? Am I going to get what I need for my job? You just work for the company and they provide you, whether it's a hard hat or a computer or whatever, correct? It's taken care of automatically. And if it's a really good company or a really good husband or really good parents, you can forget about your needs completely. I'm sure we've all had an experience that sometime we worked for someone who took care of our needs so completely that we didn't have to think about our needs at all. It wasn't because we didn't care whether or not, it wasn't because we were miserable.
I don't care if I'm happy or not.
It was because we were automatically happy. So Krishna is the perfection of that. No boss, no husband, no father, no mother, no employer can really satisfy all of our needs. So therefore, even if I'm in that situation, there's always a part of me that's wondering, you know, are they really going to take care of me tomorrow? But when I give everything to Krishna, I can really give everything to Krishna. Now that probably doesn't happen on day one. So probably on day one, I'm thinking, okay, I want to be happy, it's about me, but I've understood that the real way to be happy is to please Krishna, so I'm going to please Krishna so I can be pleased. And gradually you start seeing that as you work to please Krishna, you no longer have to worry about whether or not he's going to please you. And as you work to please Krishna, your faith develops and your taste develops. So gradually, you don't even think about, am I going to be taken care of? Am I going to be happy? You're just happy. Is that okay? Assume that in the beginning, it's going to be mixed. It must be. You can't say that in order to start pure bhakti, you have to be pure. You can't say in order to be qualified for the process of pure bhakti, you have to already be pure in bhakti. We saw you can start pure bhakti from vikarma. You can start pure bhakti from it. Pure bhakti simply means my goal is loving service to Krishna, and I'm convinced that all I need is bhakti to purify me. Anyabhilasitasvanyam, that means my goal is loving service to Krishna. Yes, I have other desires, but my goal is loving service to Krishna. Jnana karma anavritam. I don't think I need karma to purify me, and I don't think I need jnana to purify me. I think I just need bhakti. Then you're in pure bhakti. And you're convinced, pure bhakti will purify me. The process of bhakti will purify me of trying to satisfy myself separately from Krishna and having other desires. Is that okay?
Is that mix-up is because of the three modes of nature?
Yes. It's due to the three modes of nature, bad association, not being careful, watering the weeds instead of bhakti. Okay, and I'm getting a very clear body language signal here that it's time to stop. Okay, tomorrow we're having a presentation here again? Okay, tomorrow we're having a presentation on sex desire. What is it? Where does it come from? What do you do with it? So I should say this presentation was developed, it started with